This is the Norris Group's Real Estate Investor Radio Show, the award-winning show dedicated to thought leaders shaping the real estate industry and local experts revealing their insider tips to succeed in an ever-changing real estate market. Hosted by author, investor, and hard money lender, Bruce Norris.
Hi, thank you for joining us. My name is Bruce Norris, and today our special guest is Chris German. Chris has specialized in selling multifamily residential properties since joining RE/MAX Commercial in 2007. Chris consistently ranks among the top three commercial agents within RE/MAX Commercial National Division, and over the last 12 years has been awarded every award RE/MAX has to offer: the RE/MAX Hall of Fame Award, Chairman's Club Award, Lifetime Achievement Award, and most notably the prestigious Diamond Club Award in years 2015, 2016, and 2017. With a proven track record of over 200 successfully closed transactions accounting for more than $250 million in investment real estate, Chris attributes his success to client-centered business based on hard work, honesty, and unparalleled negotiating skills. What Chris's clients have found is that regardless of market direction, Chris continues to successfully sell more real estate at higher prices than his competitors. In his spare time, Chris has been an active community leader, working with high school youth through religious and athletic outreach programs. In addition, Chris is a contributor to philanthropic efforts such as St. Jude's Children's Hospital, the American Cancer Society, and annually provides a holiday celebration for Veronica's Home of Mercy, a women's and children's shelter in San Bernardino, California. So, Chris, we welcome you to our show.
As you're reading that, I'm thinking, gosh, who we're going to be interviewing today? Sounds great, right? No, thank you. Thank you for having me.
Well, thanks for doing all the things that you do, not just being successful, but, you know, directing some of that to people that have a need. So I do appreciate that. As you know, we're kind of built the same way, so that's cool.
Yes, sir.
Now, it's interesting. Your timing is... When I got into real estate, it was 1980-81, and interest rates for a mortgage was 17%, and that kind of always kind of clouded, or it always made me think anything under 10% was good interest rates. So it's just sort of whenever you get into a market and it's a certain way, you realize that, okay, just because it's 5% interest doesn't mean it's always been, and you just have a different perspective. So you get into the apartment world in 2007. So, first of all, why apartments? Why did you get into that part of it?
So in the commercial field, you have a senior agent or a senior teacher, if you will, someone that takes you under their wing, teaches you the ropes of the business. And that gentleman actually was a good friend of mine from high school, who right out of high school had went to college, and then from there went and worked for a commercial firm, and he specialize in multifamily. So basically, because he did multifamily, that's what I did. And had he done retail, I might be doing retail today. I was just very fortunate. I didn't know it at the time, but you know, multifamily has just been more tried and true, not only for the investors themselves, but for us brokers in terms of consistent volume.
Okay. Most people think of the crash that occurred in real estate affecting single family homes predominantly. Was there a year where it also affected the apartment world?
Yeah, so I got started in 2007, and you know, the standing joke always is that I get my license on Monday, and then on Wednesday, God in his humor decides the market should crash. And that's where I started, was in the middle of that real estate downturn. I didn't know a good market per se. I didn't know the days of, you know, 2004 to 2007 when things were on the run up. And, we saw a change in values then. We actually just recently did a study trying to create some projections of what's going to come out of this pandemic. And even then, values were off maybe by, on average, 15%. Now, of course, some communities have harder than others. But the average we found, so even my surprise was 15%. And since then, since say 2010, we've had a huge run up in apartment values for many reasons. But you know, one of the major contributors has been the escalating rents. Rents have nearly doubled in some areas since when I first started in the business, you know, for a one bedroom, a two bedroom, so forth. And so that really has lent itself to that growth. And we're all talking free rent control, because now with rent control, you can't raise rents overnight. And so, you know, that has stymied the market. But up until, you know, these limitations, or up until, I would say, last year, when we knew these limitations were, you know, there was a strong probability that rent control was going to be in place, investors, you know, of multifamily saw the huge run up, not only in their cash flow because of the rental rates, but also the appreciation factor.
You know, the boom for apartments, part of that came on the back of a lot of people who lost their credit and went from owner occupants to renters. Would you agree to that?
Sure. And I think that's evidence, because here we are, you know, we have this economic collapse, and at least in the market that we work and track, which is a major portion of Los Angeles and San Bernardino County, vacancy maybe at that time jumped to 5-6%. Well, or I should say, it didn't go beyond 5 or 6% vacancy.
Right.
So, and that's because we, even though a lot of tenants were being hurt, you had a big demographic of tenants who left California to other states looking for work, or, you know, depending on what city we're talking about, individuals that say were day laborers, and now they go back to Mexico because there's not work here. You had, like you mentioned, this influx of people that, of course, you had been foreclosed on. Now they become tenants. And so that shored up any huge vacancy that we thought we had.
You know, in the last 10 years, single-family construction normally explodes from, you know, a downturn to an you know, like a high point in price. We're still, single-family construction's at about 30% of what would be a great year. But apartments construction, that's been a whole nother ball game. So I know that that's kind of made up the difference. Is that ongoing? Is there still a lot of apartments that are scheduled to be built or are being built?
Yeah, so everything that I'm reading says that that has slowed down. Again, in terms of, we're talking about new permitting, new projects, stuff that wasn't already in the works, you know, rent control really throws a wrench in the motor on the projections of you know, the values of these newly constructed properties. And so I think you're going to see a slowdown of that, at least for the next few years. But obviously, there's a need if we're talking about numbers of potential renters. But at the same time, there's been a lot of legislation here of late that isn't favorable to the developers, unless they want to build, say, low-income housing or something like this. And so that new, and interestingly enough, that new supply that we have had has impacted more, say, like San Bernardino County versus LA County. I, you know, even for myself, as you know, I finished a project that your firm had helped finance, and we took that property essentially to the stud, the multifamily, and renovated everything and brought it up to speed. But we're competing with units that are sitting empty in these newly constructed properties. And we're only asking, say, a couple hundred difference in rent, because they've had to drop their asking rents to get their places full, and they're offering concessions, versus LA County, where the product they build, the demographic there is the service, you know, their building versus, say, the standard 1960s mom and pop building, you know, they're asking rent there sometimes double, and so it's, you know, a different tenant base. But here in San Bernardino, even in Riverside County, there's more, you know, competition between the older supply and the new supply when it comes to getting them full.
If you had to, I don't know, grade the mood of the apartment owner, what's the shift been like from euphoria of 2019 to what it feels like today?
Yeah, so you have, I had a partner say it's how did he say it? BCDCAC. Before Corona, during Corona, after Corona, right? I mean, it's like, it's going to be three markets here. And so, yeah, going in prior to the coronavirus, even though the writing was on the wall that the market was shifting. Since 2017, values had stopped climbing. They hadn't fell or dropped by any significant amount, but we also didn't see these leaps and bounds that we had saw from 2010 to 2017. So the writing was on the wall. Then comes this virus, and so it has intensified the correction that we thought we would have had anyhow. And so if you would ask me that question, March, mid-March, even last month, everybody was at a standstill. Primarily because, they're just worrying for their own safety and watching as we turned off the economy and countries that basically seized up for several weeks. And so it was definitely a watch and wait. Here now, over the last 2 weeks, not only in my personal business, speaking with other agents that do a good deal of transactions, speaking with loan brokers who, obviously as a loan broker, they deal with several agents and talking to those that historically work with those agents that turn a lot of deals. The market is coming back. Investors now are maybe not more optimistic, but they're just not as fearful as they were. I think a part of that is, you and I, we did a webinar on March 19th, and then the governor shut the state down on March 20th. And so from that shutdown came a lot of legislation, a ban on evictions. Tenants almost were incentivized not to pay rent, or at least they read it that way. And so landlords were bracing for impact of, my gosh, what if half of my building doesn't pay the rent? Well, the reality has been in our studies that at least landlords are collecting about 90 to 95% of their rent. And again, I'm talking here local, LA, San Bernardino County. The only area that might be different would be LA City, because those tenants really have been encouraged not to pay rent, and they have the whole rent strike and everything in LA City. It's tough to be an owner there right now. But in general, rent collection has been good. It was good in April, then it was good again in May. And so that has, made investors feel good that, wow, even after my tenants were being told they don't have to pay rent, and even after they were told that we can't evict them, they still paid me. So this must be a solid investment. And so now they're hopeful, and not like everyone's jumping into the market, but at the same time, they feel a lot better about it. And we're starting to see some deal flow now.
Okay. So you don't have people running out the gate saying, just get me out of here. That's a good thing.
No. I mean, I guess there's a portion of individuals who are pondering because obviously this is not done. Right? I mean, in my estimate, we're just getting started in terms of the effects of what just happened over the last 2.5 months. And so those individuals who are looking to cash out, or who had thoughts about selling and cashing out altogether, are pondering, well, gosh, do I sell today? Will selling today mean that I keep, say, 10% more of my equity versus a potential downturn towards the end of the year as, say, the effects of $3 trillion that they just printed, the effect of, people being out of work beyond the pay period for unemployment. And so I think those individuals are, weighing their options here. But in most cases, people are about the same mindset in terms of their strategy.
Okay. Do you think there will be a change in migration for California? First of all, from where you're living in an apartment, your close proximity, and also just for California in general, California losing more people because of this?
Well, sure. I had heard about the migration issues, but it really is after, having worked from you, learning a lot from you, that, we had paid closer attention to it. And, people that were already leaving the state because of the tax issues here and businesses that were leaving and what have you, obviously that still exists. Plus, you have all the other issues on top of it. So, I think that'll still continue to be the trend. People are looking for more affordable housing, and they're able to seek it, say in states like Arizona or Texas or some of these other places. And we're not just talking about the older folks that are retiring, but, people middle-aged or even those individuals that are in their first career. I just was talking with a client. His son moved to Texas, for those very reasons, and he's, in his early 30s. And, California, will suffer from that. The other side of that coin that, I've heard people say, why it's much to worry about nothing is because of the migration we had. Now, if you're, speaking with regards to apartments and the communities that we work, but with the migration that you still have of people from Latin America and so forth coming here, that they'll be the ones to fill up the building, even if you had an issue with, people vacating and moving to other states. We don't know yet. There's not enough data to see, how that's going to play out. But, of course, it's something to watch.
What policies are in place to help a renter typically right now? They could be an owner as well, but since you have apartments mostly, the renter, are they the recipient of some of these unemployment checks, and how long does that last?
Yeah, so luckily this time around with unemployment, they also offered it to what they call these gig workers, self-employed individuals, and it was something that, even say individuals who do real estate, right? So normally as a self-employed individual, you wouldn't have access to unemployment. So the government opened it up for these other professions, and thankfully so, because this would have been a lot of uglier. And so I believe you get, 30-some weeks of payments, if I understand correctly, and I understand that checks are, $600 or something a week. And I've heard the comment that some of these people are making more money on unemployment than they were making when they were a working individual, especially in the C communities, if we're talking about rentals.
Now the $600 check is actually a federal portion, right?
I believe so.
Yeah, there's two checks.
We don't get these checks, so I don't know.
Yeah, but no, I don't either. But there's a state portion, and the federal portion is $600. So combined, it can be a grand a week.
Yeah, I mean, gosh, not a bad deal. Right?
No.
And I would imagine for many of these folks that, they'd rather be working though, right? Just for their own pride.
Yeah, of course. And of course.
Many of them are just their victim of the situation. And so now for landlords, there's not much help. It's interesting. The state basically has said, they won't admit it, but what they basically have said is, okay, people are hurting economically. So landlords, you're going to give a loan to your tenants, interest-free for anywhere from 6 to 12 months, depending on what city you own in. And the reason why I phrase it that way is because if a tenant can prove that there's been a loss of wages, unemployment, they took care of somebody that had COVID-19, they caught it themselves, and another laundry list of reasons, then they can miss their rental payment while the stay-at-home order is in place. And then once the governor lifts the stay-at-home order, again, depending on where they live, they have anywhere from 6 to 12 months to make up the back rent. And in the interim, the landlord's just supposed to float these free rental payments. Well, so if you do the math, and I forgot to mention, a real bonus is that the Judicial Council, on their own accord, at the same time decided they will not hear any eviction cases or process evictions for 90 days from the date that the governor lifts the stay-at-home order. So let's just assume life goes back to normal, say, July 1st or somewhere thereabouts. The tenant then has missed in some cases, the April payment, May and June. They could be, say, up to 3 months behind. Then they have another 3 months. They know that they can't be evicted. So now we're not getting into eviction court, say, until September, October sometime. In many of these communities, do any of us believe that these tenants can make up 2 to 3 months of rent, or even that they will, if they have 6 to 12 months of a payout, that you're going to see this money, that the landlords will see the money down the road? So when I'm asked the question, well, Chris, you know, where are values? As of right now, not much has changed in the, other than there's not really any deals going on. It's just starting to pick up again. So we don't know what COVID really meant to apartment values as of yet. I think in August I would have a better pulse, because we'll be able to see those buildings that were listed for sale March, April, May, where do they end up selling? But long term, now we might have a situation where apartment owners, especially those who own in LA City, and they might have to go several months without income, get hurt, and you're going to see, you know, where they're going to be in need to sell. And so there's essentially no help for landlords. All these loans, the PPP and the EIDL, I think it is, and the others, unless they held title or they had a certain entity set up for management where they're self-employed, then they could have. Aside of that, there's no government aid. You know, they talk about that the state has a surplus. Many people were calling for some type of aid from the government, rent vouchers. Why not get, instead of telling the landlords, just allow them to live there for X amount of months for free, why doesn't the state step in and tap this pool of money and give them a rent voucher, maybe not for the full amount, but something to assist the landlords, because in the meanwhile, they still have mortgages to pay and all the other goodies.
Do you have any concerns about any pending legislation or legislation that's been discussed but not yet approved? I'm just curious if you have any thoughts on what you think might be next.
Yeah, so the main one is they're putting rent controls back on the ballot this November. And obviously we have statewide rent control, but it's a much stricter version that would limit rental increases to 3% annually versus what's in place now, which is 5% plus the change in CPI annually. That's what's really worrisome to us, because, you know, at 3%, as even individual cities change, you know, the trash carriers and other expenses go up, and even with the cost of living going up, it definitely, you know, dips into the rate of return that landlords, including myself, assumed we would have received over time and really were projecting for future gains and, you know, other things down the road. So that's what's most worrisome. And it's interesting because in October of 2018, we defeated rent control. So then, and we voted as a state and unanimously we defeated rent control. And yet the governor then said, okay, not just him, but the other cronies there with him decided, well, we know better than those who voted. So now we have rent control, and that took effect January 1st. And then the gentleman who originally put rent control on the ballot in October of 18 is the gentleman who now has put this stricter version on the ballot for November. And in his words, it's because he feels that although we already have state rent control, the state didn't go far enough, and he knows better than even the governor. And that's where we are.
Well, what's interesting about that is that even if we voted down again, it doesn't mean they won't convene and do it anyway.
Yeah, and it's the, you know, and I guess there's been, this isn't the only issue where the government has gone against the will of the people, but it's just, it's quite something to watch and be a part of.
Yeah. Prop 13, how do you think that might play out for apartments?
Well, you know, it doesn't affect, this version doesn't affect apartments. It affects commercial properties. But I imagine that will be the first domino to fall. And then they would come after residential after. So as of right now, it doesn't affect multifamily properties and the clients we work with. But of course, you know, brokers that work with clients who own retail and manufacturing and so forth, you know, that's not good news for them.
There was something floating around with a mandatory 25% discount on rent. What happened to that?
Yeah, so that was slated to be voted on, I want to say, 2 weeks ago now. And I did some searching around, you know, the day of and the day after and a couple of days after, and I didn't find that there was any final vote taken. And so as of right now, it's up in the air. But that was another doozy where somebody said, well, let's give the judge the authority right in the courtroom to reduce the rental rate by up to 25% if the tenant has had or can show proof that they've been affected by the coronavirus. And, you know, those that are the, I guess, the tenants and those groups that are the tenant advocacy groups, you know, to them, they hear somebody talking like me and they say, well, God, you know, you're heartless. And what about these people that have been out of work or even worse, if they had, you know, were affected or family affected by the virus? And the bottom line is, how does it become the landlord's responsibility to take care of another individual, right? So how can you force philanthropy on these people to just, you know, essentially give a handout to someone they have no responsibility for? It's ludicrous. And it's even that much more appalling that the state is pointing the finger saying, landlords, this is your problem, and yet at the same time not opening their wallet to at least assist in some shape or form.
I think what's really also disturbing is that, you know, when you own something, you kind of got there because you understood the rules of engagement. So this is how the rules work. I get it. I want to participate. And then in the last 12 months, there's been a lot of rule changing where you didn't feel like you had even a vote.
Right.
So that's concerning.
Yeah, it has changed, you know, in structuring deals. I mean, it's just changed, you know, as we look at these assets. And again, so taking my realtor hat off and putting my landlord hat on, my investor hat on, you know, you purchase certain properties with the assumption that the rents will go up, you know, X amount over time. And really, I'm slating for one, for my kids' college. As you know, I have 7 children. My 8th child will be due. He's due a week from now. So
my goodness.
A week or two from now, we'll have 8 kids. And so I bought properties and took the risk and put my money and neck on the line, assuming that when my kids hit college, I would be making X amount of months for my properties and thus could, you know, afford college for my kids. And eventually then be able to pay for my retirement. Many landlords have the same story. You know, they're either currently living off of their rentals as the vast majority of their retirement, or they're accumulating properties so that they will represent the vast majority of their retirement down the road. And now you just skew the numbers, and what you really have done is change their standard of living.
Well,
and, you know, funny, going back to that legislation about the, they were proposing to reduce their rent by 25%. The best line of that whole piece was, if a landlord owned more than 10 rental units, so it could be 10 units in one building or say a 2-4 units and a duplex, whatever the case may be, more than 10 units, the judge is to assume it would not be a financial burden for the landlord to allow for the rent reduction.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow. Well, I think that's what bothers me most about somebody's just ability to write something like that and enact changes when you bought things under a different rule of law. I think that once we realize if that's going to be the trend, that what we thought were the rules can be changed on a whim, that makes it very uncomfortable. Really does.
And it, I mean, even when, you know, with commercial loans, those who own commercial property, they know that typically these loans are fixed for 3, 5, 7, 10 years. And then they go adjustable or readjust to a certain rate. And so you're locked, let's say investors that bought a property 2 years ago was locked at a certain rate. They knew that it would adjust. And now you cannot keep your rents up to speed because there's these new limitations that weren't in place when you agreed to these loans. How's that fair? You know, you might have done that same deal had you known otherwise. So
it's a funny thing, but if those loans adjust any time in the next 12 months, they'll probably go down.
Right.
Last question, Chris. Whatever business was a year ago, and let's say call that business as usual. How long do you think going forward before we see that type of market and mood again?
You know, it's interesting, and we did a video piece on this as well. You know, it's interesting that in order to fight a respiratory infection, everybody went and bought toilet paper, right? That was really interesting. And so with that type of mindset, you know, I'll put the economics aside. You probably could speak better to that. So I'm going to stay in my lane because I know multifamily. That's what I eat and breathe. And I think in terms of business as usual, it goes back to the psychology of the people. If they, meaning the powers that be, continue to present the narrative that, this virus is more than what it is, or if cities and counties like LA County, who just announced a week ago that they're not going to allow business to open up until July 1st, so now you're killing that many more small businesses. You know, they're affecting the psychology, the sense of security that investors feel that it's going to take that much longer. I realize that they're having to weigh between the health of the people versus the health of the economy. But if they play this game too long, we're all going to get hurt from the economic side of it. And otherwise, most of us probably would be okay with, not okay if we caught the virus, but in other words, it's not as much as we thought it was in the rate. So I would just point to that. What's the sentiment of the people? Because if you look at the other side of it and say, well, no, it's all financial. Well, look at it this way. I just mentioned a few minutes ago, 90 to 95% of tenants are paying. Well, we already factor in a 3 to 5% vacancy factor anyways, so that deal's solid. Interest rates, although they've picked up a little bit for commercial loans, maybe they've gone up 0.75 point, still historically low. That's healthy. Lenders, you know, they, for the time being, they've tightened the reins there. They changed some things, and so that's one component of it. But in general, the financials are about the same that we had even say a year ago in terms of those things. But again, going forward, if there's more fear mongering and what have you, that many more people will stand on the sidelines, and it becomes a supply and demand factor where if there's not the demand and people need to sell, then they got to float the building at a price that'll you know, bring those people out to buy. So if you ask me to put a timeline to all that, then I think most people want to see what's the full ramification when you print $3 trillion. What does that mean? Are we going to have, I've heard people argue for hyperinflation. I've also heard people argue for deflation.
Yes.
So how does that play out? So minimum, and the other piece of it is they're saying that this thing could flare up again in the fall. So I think minimum it's going to be January or February before things feel somewhat normal.
Okay. Now, you typically hold public events. Are you thinking of doing one this year, or that'll be pushed to next year?
Yeah, so, you know, during this coronavirus, a lot of the education that we've been doing for the landlords has been primarily video-based. Even the live event that you and I were slated to do, we had to switch that in a week's time because this was back in March because of the issues with the virus then. Usually we have our second event in the fall, around October. I'm just going to, and I'll have to make a decision by August if we're going to, what's going to happen there. And I'm just going to really gauge it upon, you know, how do we see people behaving in public? Are people comfortable going to restaurants and, you know, what happens with movie theaters and closed venues? And if that seems like, you know, people are open to it and it wouldn't seem as an insensitive thing if we held our event, then I'm all for it. It's better than doing the webinar or something. But if we still sense that people would say, hey, you know, this is kind of in bad taste with what's going on, then we may hold off until the spring of next year.
Okay. All right, Chris. Well, thank you so much for your time today. Give us your website, if you will.
Yeah. So our website is theapartmentdealer.com, all singular, theapartmentdealer.com. You can find us on Facebook, the same, The Apartment Dealer, YouTube, The Apartment Dealer, Instagram, The Apartment Dealer. Basically type in The Apartment Dealer and you'll find us everywhere.
Okay. All right, Chris, thanks for your time. Have a great week.
All right, sir. Thank you.
Okay. Take care. Bye-bye.
The Norris Group originates and services loans in California and Florida under California DRE License 01219911, Florida Mortgage Lender License 1577, and NMLS License 1623669. For more information on hard money lending, go to thenorrisgroup.com and click the Hard Money tab.
For more information on hard money loans and upcoming events with the Norris Group, check out thenorrisgroup.com. For information on passive investing with trust deeds, visit tngtrustdeeds.com.